Welcome to Hoop Talks. I'm Noor Zainab, next to Justin Pooney, and we've brought on the one, the only, Jovan Buha of The Athletic to talk us through the Lakers and their success in the postseason. Jovan, thank you so much for joining us today. And first of all, congratulations. No one thought the Lakers would be here right now, but they are, and they're making some noise, about to pull 3-1 ahead of the defending champions. How is morale? How's the team? How are you feeling?
I think no one other than maybe the 15 players and however many coaches there are in the locker room. These days, NBA teams have like 10, 15 coaches. But, you know, outside of that locker room, there weren't many people that expected the Lakers to be in the second round. Let's say like February 1st, like if you told me February 1st, they were going to be up 2-1. And potentially, yeah, as you said, with game four coming up, 3-1 in the second round, like I don't think anyone would have believed that. So the transformation they've had since the trade deadline has been incredible. The league's best defense in the regular season from that point on, league's best defense right now in the playoffs. They've just been incredible on that end. And that's to say nothing of their offense, which continues to feature Anthony Davis, LeBron James, guys like D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves, stepping up. So really it's been, I think a total team effort. It hasn't been the same as that 2021 run where Anthony Davis and LeBron James were really doing everything for that group with some, you know, key contributions from role players, but it was a LeBron 80 heavy, attack. Whereas this year, I think it's been a little bit more balanced. Of course, defensively, I think AD is the key. But offensively, it kind of changes night to night who's the leading guy. So, I think it's been an incredible run. We'll see how long it lasts. You know, I think you got to give some credit to Golden State here, where they're the defending champs. They've won four times. Steve Kerr and Steph Curry have seen it all. I'm sure they'll come out with some adjustments in game four. So, I think this is probably the game that decides the series. There's a big difference going back to San Francisco for game five, 2-2 versus 3-1 for the Lakers, with Golden State having two of the final three games there. So I really think game four is going to be probably the best game of the series that we've seen so far, and also the one that ultimately determines the winner.
I'm glad you mentioned the trade deadline, because I think even prior to that, we saw a completely different Lakers team, and the play-in was a question mark, but let alone the playoffs itself. Yep. But as you mentioned, you went out, you got D'Angelo Russell, you had Malik Beasley. Jared Vanderbilt has been so big for your team so far. But in addition to that, you've also seen the role players for the Lakers step up in Rui Hachimura, Austin Reeves. In between the two, what do you think has been the winning factor for this team?
Well, with Austin broke out where, you know, he went from coming off the bench. He was kind of their sixth, seventh man, depending on the night, to being a starting shooting guard. Someone who I think is going to get paid a lot of money this offseason. The most the Lakers can offer him is about 3 years, 4 years, $50.8 million. And he could easily get more than that as a restricted free agent on the open market. Has struggled a little bit in this series, and I wonder how that affects his market, if at all. But, up until this point, had basically been averaging 18 points, shooting over 50% as a starter for the Lakers. So, to me, it really emerged as that third guy and could do it on both ends. You know, again, I think this has been a tough series for him having to match up with Klay, but I thought he did much better matching up against Steph in game three. And then Rui, that was someone the Lakers got for pennies, basically traded Kendrick Nunn and 3 second-round picks, but they ended up getting 3 second-round picks back in the Thomas Bryant trade. So essentially traded Kendrick Nunn for Rui Hachimura, and Kendrick wasn't really playing. So to go from that to Rui, who on some nights has been their best bench player, and game one in Memphis, drops 29 points, hits 5 threes, and almost single-handedly wins them that game in the second half. He's just someone who is that tweener forward that they didn't really have around LeBron and AD. Added Jared Vanderbilt, although he's more defensive minded, more of a guy who's going to guard, guards and wings. But Rui just kind of being that guy who could slot in there in the front court, can hit threes. You know, teams don't really guard him out there, but he shot the ball well. Can attack in, the mid post, the elbows, has a solid mid range jumper, And then is also really athletic and can take it and dunk on people or finish inside. So I think, you know, again, it's kind of been a by committee thing for the Lakers, which we haven't really seen from them the last few years. It's been very LeBron and AD focused of, you know, those guys have to drop 30 plus each for the Lakers to have a chance. And that just hasn't been the case. You know, those guys have routinely been in the low 20s or even some nights below that. And the Lakers are still competitive and winning these games. So I think really this is probably the most talented supporting cast the Lakers have had around LeBron and AD. If anything, those guys not being what they were in 2020 is the only thing I can think of potentially lowering this team's ceiling. But, you know, so far it's been, again, a dominant playoff run. And, for a seven seed to be looking at potentially a conference finals run is pretty incredible.
Yo, but I was reading your latest piece on The Athletic about the Lakers' defensive adjustments in game three. And what really intrigued me was when you were talking about how Jared Vanderbilt and Anthony Davis kind of prepared for either a Steph three or a Steph drive. Can you just dive a little bit deeper into just how well Jared Vanderbilt's defensive presence has been and how it's paired with Anthony Davis, who has, as you mentioned, been the defensive anchor for the LA Lakers?
Yeah, Jared Vanderbilt, if AD's 1A, Jared Vanderbilt's 1B or maybe at worst number two, but his ability to defend multiple positions, had the Steph Curry assignment in games one and two, I thought did a brilliant job against him, all things considered. I mean, it's hard to obviously defend Steph. Many have tried and almost all have failed or all have failed, you know, depending on how you look at it. But I think, you know, Darvin Ham deserves credit for the adjustments he made in game three. You know, I think one of the prevailing criticisms against Darvin from the coach, from the fan base has been his lack of adjustments at times. And he's a disciple of Mike Budenholzer, who also was criticized for not making adjustments. And I think that definitely played a part in his recent, firing. But I think for Darvin to completely, you know, to really look at the way the Warriors were attacking them in game two, and then to completely shuffle, you know, all five starting, defenders ended up with a different assignment in game three after defending the same players in games one and two. So now you have Jared Vanderbilt off Steph, but on Draymond, because we know Draymond loves to screen and do dribble handoffs for Steph and Clay. So in those instances, Anthony Davis was defending Draymond, hanging back, and those guys were walking into wide open shots. But now all of a sudden you got Jared Vanderbilt defending Draymond. So you can easily switch those matchups, put Jared on Steph or Clay, and the Lakers feel great about that. So I think just those little subtle tweaks that Darvin made, putting Austin was getting cooked by Clay, putting him on Steph. He did, it was a much better matchup for him. Putting LeBron on Andrew Wiggins and putting AD on Jermichael Green, where he just said, Jermichael, if you want to make five threes tonight and that's how we lose, go do it. Jermichael Green went 0-for-3 and AD was wreaking havoc in the paint again and doing what he did in game one. So again, I expect Golden State to counter. I don't know if that's, you know, just shooting the ball better. I don't know if that's going smaller and making AD have to guard someone. There's different kind of things they can do, but I think that the chess match of this series has been really fun. And Darvin Ham moving Jared Vanderbilt around, I think, has been one of the more fun things to watch.
Oh, speaking of chess, Anthony Davis is one of the most important pieces in this chess match. He's had a really good performance and then had a clunker, and it's kind of been that pattern throughout the last little while. Why is that? And do you think he can finally string together back-to-back solid performances tonight in a crucial game four?
It's funny. It's been odd and even games. If you look at it, in odd games, he's been good. In even games, he's been bad. That would suggest game four might not be his night. I think the one thing with AD is that, I think defensively he's been there every night for the most part. I think game two that there was some slippage there. I think defense, like if you look at his block numbers, I mean, he has almost 20 more blocks. He's leading the NBA in the playoffs in blocks. He has almost 20 more blocks than the second place person in blocks right now. So like Anthony Davis has had a dominant postseason defensively. And I think that's the side of the ball that isn't as glamorous, isn't as talked about as much. And so there are times where, yeah, he might have 15 points, but he's completely dominated the game on the defensive end. And people are just going to look at the 15 points and be like, oh, he didn't show up tonight. He didn't play well. But like, if you're watching the other side of the floor, you're seeing him swatting 3-4 shots a game. You're seeing guys drive into the paint and be like, oh, AD's there, I'm going to kick the ball out. Like, I mean, I had clips in my story of like, there were multiple times in that game where Warriors players completely second guessed shots at the rim or shots around Anthony Davis because he was just in their vicinity. And they're like, we're probably going to get this blocked or altered, and we're going to look for someone else to take a shot right now. So I think his defense has always been there, but the offense has been an issue. I think for him, it's there's an energy component where he is expending so much energy on defense that sometimes that comes at the expense of his offense and just his, you know, ability to attack from there. But I think that the key you saw in game three versus game two was game two took 11 shots, but only 3 of those were within 5 feet of the rim. He was very jump shot heavy. It was very much, okay, you're playing off me, I'm going to pull up. He's very confident in his jumper, and some nights it's falling, some nights it's not. And I think those nights it's not, he has to attack the rim. And you saw that he got 2 fouls on Draymond, basically just driving straight into Draymond. And the Warriors challenged one of them. The Lakers, he actually got an offensive foul on one of them. Lakers challenged it, it got overturned. But I think for AD, it's like, go get an offensive foul, go knock someone over. And I think, for him, like he's got to kind of have that mindset of I'm bigger than Draymond, I'm quicker than Looney, like throw anyone at me, I can score on them. And I think for him, the closer he is to the basket, the more dangerous he is just with his size and athleticism. So Lakers got to get him, in pick and rolls and closer to the basket. If they continue to do that, I think Golden State's going to have a really hard time defending AD.
Well, we're talking about the Lakers, but we've barely mentioned LeBron James. We can't really have that here, which is kind of crazy. But I think you pretty much mentioned why the supporting cast has really showed up for the Lakers, which is probably why we don't really need to see LeBron be LeBron in this series so far. But there's a glaring hole there. LeBron's been averaging 30 points in the play-in. He was averaging 28 points in the regular season. And then as of the playoffs right now, it's only 20 in terms of points. So do you see LeBron being more aggressive as the series goes on?
I could see it. I do think, the one thing with LeBron, and I don't want to use it as an excuse by any means, but he is still recovering from that foot injury. He did return earlier than expected. As he shared in his first availability after his return, he spoke with multiple doctors, and all of them suggested him to get season-ending surgery. And the one doctor that didn't was the LeBron James defeat, and he chose to go with that doctor and ultimately do some rehab and come back earlier than expected. Again, even if he didn't have the season ending surgery, everything I was hearing, everything other people were reporting was LeBron's going to be back maybe the last 3 or 4 games of the regular season. He comes back with 8 games left, about a week and a half earlier. And, I think has had some good moments, and I thought in game 3 started to look more like himself, but there have been too many times where he just doesn't have that burst, that athleticism, that lateral quickness defensively that we've been so accustomed to with him for 20 years. And honestly, seeing, like, I forgot who shared it on Twitter, but I saw recently a kind of a highlight package of LeBron before the injury, and like, looks like a totally different guy. So I that was still in year 20, with him at 38. So I think he's really been hampered by that injury. Now, with that said, game 3, first quarter, D'Angelo Russell goes off, scores the first 11 points, 13 in the quarter. And LeBron is in quarterback mode. He's commanding the offense, 6 assists in the first quarter, doesn't take a shot in the first quarter for the first time in his playoff career. So I think with all these weapons and toys that he has at his disposal, he is looking to get those guys going. That's kind of how LeBron has always been. He's always been more of a first quarter, second quarter, I'm kind of reading the defense, I'm reading how the game's going. Third quarter, fourth quarter, I'll ramp it up if needed. So I think that's kind of in line with where he's at. I don't think he's had to do as much necessarily. There's probably been a game or two where he could have ramped it up more and either couldn't or just didn't. And I think the Lakers kind of needed that. But I think to get to where the Lakers want to get to, which is winning a championship, be it the rest of this round, next round if they advance, or the finals if they get there, they are going to need those vintage LeBron performances. They're going to need a few of them. And if he can't summon that, again, due to age, fatigue, injury, whatever it is, I think that's a problem. And that's something that will ultimately hold the Lakers back. But if he can, and maybe he's just saving his bullets that he's got left, and he's only got a few left, so he's going to really, you know, wait to use it until the Lakers really, really need it. Then I think they can go far and potentially win a championship. But to me, like, LeBron more often than not has to be the best offensive player on the floor. He showed that in the regular season. He showed that before his injury. We have rarely seen that guy since then. But again, I don't know how much of that's just him managing the injury, managing his workload, his energy, versus he just can't do it right now because of that. So that's something I'm fascinated by, because that to me really determines this Lakers ceiling.
Yo, one last question quickly. Bronny James committed to USC over the weekend, staying close to home. And LeBron said, reminded everybody that he's still serious about playing with Bronny. Do you think he actually does leave the Lakers and plays wherever Bronny goes?
Well, he recently, a couple months ago when he talked about it, he kind of changed his stance on playing with him on the same team, and sort of was softened it a little bit. It was more like, I just want to be on the same floor as him and you know, be in the league at the same time as him. So I think there's a, you know, if Bronny makes the NBA after his freshman year, after his sophomore year, you know, whenever, LeBron will likely still be playing. And, you know, I think they'll be able to share the floor together. Now, whether he's willing to leave the Lakers and you know, go elsewhere, I think that's still kind of TBD. I don't think he wants to go to a lottery team and kind of toil away at the end of his career just to play with Bronny necessarily. But, you know, that was his previous stance. So I don't, you know, to your point, it did kind of sound like that again when he just recently spoke about it. But a little bit earlier in the season, a couple months ago, he did sort of change it where it was more like, I just want to be on the floor at the same time as him. It doesn't have to necessarily be on the same team. So I think that's the thing to watch. Like, we got to see how Bronny develops. Right now, he's looking like a potential first round pick, but a lot can happen. A lot can change in his freshman year. So I think, you know, the timeline definitely matters as well. LeBron has, you know, one more year as a Laker before he can opt out. So, you know, for sure next season he'll be a Laker. You know, Bronny will be in college. But beyond that, I think it depends on how this postseason goes. I think it depends how next season goes. And then it depends maybe what city Bronny ends up in, right? Like, I think maybe he ends up in Toronto, you know, but that versus Orlando, I don't know if LeBron's going to Orlando again after being in the bubble for a few months. But
if you're telling me that James' family could come to Toronto now, Jovan, here,
no,
it's Monday morning. I might be staking too high. You're saying no.
We'll see.
Well, game four is tonight in LA. The Lakers take on the defending champions, hoping to go up 3-1. And we'll see if LeBron's going to be at the shooting range tonight or working quarterback once again. Thank you so much, Jovan, for joining us today from The Athletic. You can find him everywhere on socials at Jovan Buha. We'll leave it at the bar below as well. And thank you so much for coming on here. We'll see you guys next time. The Phoenix Suns and the 76ers both tied up their playoff series on Sunday. And then we're also going to move on to preview Knicks versus Heat here on Hoop Talks. Hey, everybody. Welcome into Hoop Talks. I'm Krina Mustafa, joined by Justin Pooney, Nur Zainab, and Jelani Goodrich-Reed, who's giving a weird...
That was kind of confirmation
right
look. Yes, I'm here.
That was strange, man.
You're locked in.
It's kind of locked in. Let's go. Game time.
It's that LeBron Miami screenshot.
Absolutely.
But we'll start with the Phoenix Suns. They defeated the Denver Nuggets 129-124. The series is now tied 2-2. We're not going to dwell too long on Jokic and Flopgate because I feel like...
That what do they call it now, Flopgate?
I called it Flopgate.
I like that, actually.
Is it a good name?
She made it.
Yeah. Flopgate's good.
It's
like
okay.
That.
Okay. Well, anyway, speaking of Jokic, Jokic put up 53 points, 4 rebounds, 11 assists, but the Nuggets still lost. So, Justin, I'll start with you.
Me first.
I know. It's crazy. You started with me last week, I think, right?
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know.
You're going to take it anyway if you don't give it to her. So.
But Jokic is really good. He's going to put up performances like this. But can they still win this series, even with those performances, if they're not getting much from everybody else?
I mean, like, you got 28 points from Jamal Murray and everybody else was kind of like 10, 11. I think the Denver Nuggets kind of fumbled the bag a little bit last night. This was a game that had they won, they would have had a commanding lead in the series. Again, no Chris Paul. And it's really on the Suns. It's really only just Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. That's it. I think the Nuggets are in trouble now. Now, they have the advantage at home court where, you know, Game 5 and potential Game 7 are in Denver. But I just think the way that Devin Booker and Kevin Durant are playing, they missed a massive opportunity here. Nikola Jokic, again, was amazing, world-class, masterclass performance last night in a losing effort, though. I need to see more from a guy like Michael Porter Jr. That, to me, right there, is the guy who's really standing out. He had 11 points last night, 4 for 13 shooting, 2 for 9 from three-point range. He's too talented to be doing that. And I think, again, Jokic is the main man, then it's Jamal Murray, Aaron Gordon, and stuff like that. But we don't look at Aaron Gordon to be an offensive powerhouse. Mm-hmm. We look at him to be a defensive guy out there, a guy that can hit some threes. But to me, Michael Porter Jr., if you cannot hit your shots, you are too talented to be going 4 for whatever it was again, 13 or 2 for 9 from three-point range, right? You have to be putting the ball in the basket, and he has yet to take that step to become that 20-plus point game scorer that he has all the talent in the world to become. And until that happens, I feel like that's what's holding back the Denver Nuggets from being a championship contender. And I think the way that Devin Booker and Kevin Durant are playing, and we'll see what happens when Chris Paul comes back, I think the Suns are now in the driver's seat for this series.
Yeah, and speaking of the Suns, Noor, how would you grade them right now in your confidence in them moving forward?
Would you also factor in the Clippers series in that?
Sure.
I'm gonna say a B minus. They caught it easy. Let's be honest, they caught it easy. Kawhi went down, pulled Paul George went down. They got it pretty easy in terms of getting a Clippers team that was hobbled that they were able to overcome. Because let's be honest, the Clippers were one of the deepest teams in the Western Conference, and then having to go against Nuggets now, where I thought they were pretty evenly matched because the Suns they're pretty top heavy, and the Nuggets also have a lot of role players around them. So in terms of that, they've been doing well because you're watching KD and Booker come through. So I think factoring both and seeing how far they've come so far, I'm going to give them a B minus, mm-hmm. because you got to factor in also the fact that DeAndre Ayton has not been himself at all. Not that he's been a great player this entire season whatsoever. I think he averaged like 18 points on the season, but in the playoffs right now, he's averaging 13 points. You're the big man on the Phoenix Suns. They need more from you. And the second that Chris Paul's not there, his impact on the game is gone. The other night he had without Chris Paul, 8 points, 8 rebounds. That was pretty much the impact you saw from him, and that meant nothing. It obviously means that if you have kept Kevin Durant on your team, you have Devin Booker, you're able to get the offensive load off for sure. But now, knock on wood, let's say any kind of injury happens beyond Chris Paul. Now you're screwed. You're going to have a really hard time, and you have to stay healthy for the rest of the postseason. So a lot is riding right now on Devin Booker and Chris Paul. And Kevin Durant.
One last point on that. Just like Nuggets had 11 bench points last night, and I think when you look at the, you know, Landry Shamet stepped up big, you don't expect him to get 19 points off the bench. That's another thing I'm interested in seeing. Can the bench players on each team step up?
Jelani, is this a must-win series for the Suns? Like, what do they do if they go down to the Nuggets?
That's a good question, because the questions are there with this whole group, right? And I get it, they went to the finals a couple years ago, but CP3 is getting older now, right? Does he retire? That's a real question. It's especially because he got hurt again, right? Let's say they get bounced, that's going to be a topic of conversation, mm-hmm. this offseason. How do they look in terms of the bench, right? Because that whole Kevin Durant trade, you do lose guys like a Cam Johnson, who was very important to that rotation, a guy like Brooklyn Bridges, who was very important to that rotation. So those are two guys that they miss, obviously, right? So how will their bench look moving forward? There's questions. Even Monty Williams, I think he's a very good coach, but a lot of people feel like, can he get it done, right? He has good groups all the time, but can he get it done? That's another question, right? So I think obviously any series in the playoffs is a must win, but I think just for their future, they have to get it done soon, because even before the deal happened with KD, I felt like their window was closed. Mm-hmm. I didn't think they were going to win a championship, right? It's opened up again because you get a guy like Kevin Durant, but still, like, doing these 40 points with him and Book every night, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to do night by night. It's hard, yeah. It's hard to see winning with that all the time. I don't know if it's really going to be a championship, you know, with only two guys doing that. So, yeah, there's going to be questions moving forward. I think, yes, right now they should look to try to win now because there's just no guarantee that they're going to get it done after this.
Which is why I'm sure they're glad they got the win last night. And moving forward, we'll see who's able to come out of this series. But moving on to 76ers and Celtics. I know Noor is very sad in her little corner there.
I actually need a second just to apologize to James Harden.
I am so sorry.
Listen, camera one right here. I apologize the deepest pits of my heart and my soul. I don't know what the hell I was saying. I mean, I knew what I was saying. I just didn't see James Harden like that beforehand. But James Harden is showing us what Houston Rockets, James Harden can do right now and even be, if anything, even more impactful on the game because he's not playing defense, he's facilitating, he's taking the pressure off of Embiid, and he's giving you 40-point nights. I'm sorry.
You're like, I was not familiar with your game.
You're never going to see, we're never going to see a Noor Zainab apology ever again, I think.
Okay, get ready for my apologies when the Lakers win, by the way. So.
Oh, actually, no. Last week, she apologized when the Clippers got bounced.
I didn't apologize. They both went down. It's different. When the injuries are a factor, it's different.
She didn't really apologize.
When someone,
I don't remember.
Did she admit that she was wrong, though?
Why would I be complaining that I was wrong?
I thought you did.
Two of my players went down. Do you see this?
I do see it. But Noor, since we started with you, I think I can kind of guess your answer, but which team are you more worried about and why?
Definitely the Celtics. And the reason for that is I think the entire postseason so far, we've seen them play with their food. And they've had the ability.
That is a great analogy. Sorry, you can keep going.
Thank you. Nice to know who your favorite is.
See, I know.
We knew this already. Keep going.
It's just good to get some compliments sometimes. You guys wouldn't know anything about that anyway. Anyway, talking about the Celtics, guys, don't get involved.
Yeah, sorry.
Anyway, so.
Go ahead. Your favorite team.
Anyway.
Raptors.
A-N-Y-W-A-Y. Anyway, so the problem with them is they play with their food. And they start off a little bit less strong than they need to. Right, Jelani?
Yeah,
I'm
listening. Go ahead, please.
Stronger than need to. They don't seem cohesive offensively at all times either. I think that's such a problem. We've also seen Marcus Smart come out and say that sometimes they're just raw dogging the offense. They're just airballing it and to see what happens. And that can happen if you have multiple guys who can facilitate in Malcolm Brogdon, in Marcus Smart, guys that can get their shots up in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. But when the offense is stagnant, you need the coach to step in and get some rhythm going, which is also why when we saw Mazzulla not call out two timeouts towards the very end of the game last night, I was kind of worried because I was like, I get that you trust your team to make the perfect play, which they had both times. I get what they did. But it might have been a little bit easier had he run up a play or had he known what to do or exploited the defense of Philly. And that just never came through. On top of that, Jason Tatum needs to show up in the playoffs. Yeah. Jaylen Brown's my guy the whole time. He had also kind of disappeared towards the very end. But Jason Tatum was just completely MIA the first half, 0 points. It was a disgraceful performance. It was almost like Embiid 0 points against the Raptors, but thankfully he showed up a little bit towards the second half. And on top of that, I think you're just really missing Robert Williams. His defense, him in the paint. He's obviously not going to stop Embiid, but he's going to be a presence to kind of just make Embiid's life a little bit more difficult. And they don't have that there, and I think that's what's really hurting them right now as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the top two guys on each team, Jason Tatum, 24 points, Jaylen Brown, 23, and then you see Harden get 42, Joel Embiid have over 30 points as well, and Embiid is coming back from injury. Mm-hmm. So when you look at that, like as much as it is also on the supporting cast, like your main stars have to be putting up numbers, especially in the playoffs. But you kind of mentioned also like the Boston didn't start out really well. The 76ers did start out. What does Philly need to do to maintain their leads in games and not let Boston make the comeback that they did?
I think basketball, especially in the playoffs, is just a game of runs, right? Every team's going to go on a run. Every team's going to get hot. And I think with the Sixers, they got up to that big lead, and then Boston kind of found their footing. You know, we mentioned, as Noor mentioned, 0 points for Jason Tatum in the first half. Second half, he started picking up. But Jaylen Brown, again, three shots in the fourth quarter. Can't happen, right? What I really want to see from the Sixers is, again, You know what? Harden has been Jekyll and Hyde. He's been amazing, and then he can't hit a shot, right? Amazing, can't hit a shot. So I want to see if he can just, he doesn't have to get 40-plus, but if he can get 22 to 23 with his 8 to 10 assists, you know, be that floor general. If Tyrese Maxey can start hitting shots.
Harden's been amazing this series.
He has. He's had two really good games, but he's also had two games where he's been not so.
Yeah, that is true. Like the last two games, he didn't show up.
Exactly, right? So I think I just want to see consistency from James Harden. Joel Embiid is working his way back to get fully healthy. I want to see Tyrese Maxey get some more shots because he's been kind of, you know, really inefficient. This is a guy that averaged 20-plus points in the regular season. So we need to see that from him. I just need to see a more complete game from Philadelphia, not so much relying on those two guys, which you have to do in the playoffs, but it's going to be their depth. It's going to help them get over the top against the Celtics in this series if they do eventually.
And I'd like
to
see more Tobias Harris as well.
He could
provide some points for you and some offense. I want to see more of that.
And
I know what he's capable of.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but I seem to find when I watch the Sixers, but you always just see sometimes it's just Tobias and Tyrese Maxey just standing in the corner.
Yeah, waiting. Right?
And waiting and hoping they're gonna get the ball. And when James Harden's cooking like that, he's not gonna give you the ball.
And Jelani, on the Celtics side, what do they need to do to not give the lead to Philly heading back to Boston?
Well, I mean, if you look at it, they've been playing a pretty good series, right? It took James Harden two daggers from Harden to have it 2-2 right now. Mm-hmm. If you look at it like that, it should be done, basically, right? I think the Celtics, like if you ask me that question that you asked, Noor, who do I trust more? I trust the Celtics more than Philly because I know what they're capable of. Mm-hmm. I think Mazzulla, he understands what they got, right? And I think he understands that they should have had that game, right? The way that they started the game was poor. I get that. But the fact that they came back down those 16 points, that showed you that DNA that they have. Remember, they did just go to the finals, right? So I see that that aspect is there. And I also see that the fact that Al Horford, I want to talk about him real quick. I get it. Embiid had a good game, right? 34 points. Mm-hmm. Obviously, fantastic game. But come to the fourth quarter, come to overtime, Al Horford plays some fantastic defense on him. If you're looking at the numbers right now, he held him to 14% from the field, right? In the fourth quarter in overtime.
It was like 14 points in the fourth quarter.
I know, I was like, whoa.
No, 14% from the field, right? Don't look at the box score. Look at what happened in that final frame and the overtime. Al Horford was, if they had won that game, he would be that MVP of that game. Right, so you look at him, but yeah, overall, I just think they could have won the game. You just go quicker in your action in that final play, you win the game, right? So I trust the Celtics. I do want to see, though, I want to see Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have a game together where not one of them doesn't show up, because it seems like it's one or the other. They
switch
both
halves.
Have to be there. We saw this in the finals too last year. It was either Brown or Tatum, mostly Brown, right? You got to have both of them show up, and then you're winning games, right? It's easier that way, obviously. So I want to see how they move forward. But to me, I got the Celtics. I think they're going to win the next two games.
I like it. I like
it. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I think Philly wins the next game in game five.
Okay, well, we'll see.
Well, you had the Sixers and seven. Celtics.
Speaking of prediction, we'll move quickly to Knicks versus Heat. They play tonight at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. The Heat lead the series 2-1. Jimmy Buckets returned in the previous game. Guys, have the Heat figured out the Knicks?
I think the Knicks have been shooting themselves in the foot, especially Julius Randle. Oh. Whenever I watch Julius Randle play the game of basketball.
Like, oh boy, here we go. What have I done?
Bro, it's so inefficient, man.
Preach,
like,
preach,
dude,
bro.
Like, just if you had like a tiny bit more efficiency in his game of basketball, he'd be so much better, right? So much better. Look, I think Jalen Brunson again didn't have a very good night, but he gets a pass. He's been carrying the
Knicks.
Still
had 20 plus.
Yeah, he had 20 plus. He shot 7 of 20 from the field. Nobody helped him, right? RJ Barrett was 5 of 16. You know, Obi Toppin, non-factor. Quentin Grimes, Emmanuel Quickley, not really a factor off the bench. Look, if Julius Randle was somewhat more efficient in the game of basketball, guys, I'm telling you right now, the Knicks would be up in this series. The fact that he's just so inefficient. And it drives me crazy.
Tyler Hero was still here, they would have been completely called it wraps in game three games.
We can talk
about what ifs and what ifs the whole time, but I think you got to give credit to Miami Heat because what they've done this postseason.
I'm not taking anything away from Miami.
And I'm not saying you are, but I'm just saying you got to give them credit. And moving forward now, too, they're going to be at home. They're 30-14 at home in the regular season. They're 3-0 in the playoffs. This is again, I cannot stress this enough. Without Tyler Hero, who is their third best scorer on the team, you're watching Jimmy Butler have a renaissance performance once again in the playoffs. But I want to give credit to the veterans on the team, which is Kyle Lowry and Kevin Love. And that team, Miami, is showing you that you need to have young guys are great. You got to build your future. Yeah, of course. Go run the basement from the rookies or whatever. But you need someone in line to guide them and to put them in the right spots to succeed and to just teach them how to make winning plays and play winning basketball. Kevin Love, those outlet passes. Kyle Lowry making the best plays offensively. That's what this team is doing. That's how they're winning right now.
Well, we'll see who wins today. Sorry, Jelani, we didn't have time for
Randall. Randall doesn't show up.
So you think on
he said it all.
Come on.
Randall needs to play some basketball.
What he was saying. Come on now.
Julius Randall, you need to play some basketball.
And that's how we're ending today's show. This has been Hoop Talks. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Score some points.